Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-F-T. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Tyler Shuck jumped in the portal today. Maybe that didn't surprise you. If you saw the Fiesta Bowl, you're probably not surprised. He was shuttling in and out of the game with Anthony Brown. Evident that Oregon's coaching staff didn't view Tyler Shuck as the guy. And I feel like we all kind of saw enough to know he wasn't the guy. Matt Preem, 24/7 Sports, has got his finger on the pulse of Oregon Ducks sports, joins us now. How shocking was this to you?
I'm not shocked that he transferred. I'm shocked at the timing of the transfer because I still believe today, even before this announcement happened, that he would be the day one starter at Oregon in 2021. I didn't know if he'd be the guy that started the final game of the year, non-injury related, but I felt pretty confident he'd be the one at least to open the year. To see him go without even competing in the spring, I think tells us a lot. Interesting enough, in his message that he posted on Twitter, no thank yous to any of the on-field coaching staff. He gave thanks to everybody else. I thought that was interesting. So it's a surprise that he left this early, but if you'd told me, hey, Tyler Shuck was going to transfer from Oregon, that part wouldn't have surprised me.
I kind of watched that Fiesta Bowl, and as he was sort of, you know, Anthony Brown was in the game, and then Shuck was in the game, then Anthony Brown was in, I was looking at both of those quarterbacks, and I said, well, you know, obviously the coaching staff is holding a tryout here during the bowl game. How good is Ty Thompson, the freshman?
Oh, he's legit. I mean, you watch him on film at the high school level and everything pops. Extremely good armed, very accurate thrower, can run and from tacklers if need be, can scramble for yards if need be. He's a big dude, so it's tough to bring down. Everything you want in a quarterback at the next level. Now, how quickly does that translate? I mean, look, we were saying these same things about Tyler Shuck this time last year, and it wasn't just us. It was players on the staff, players on the team last year. It was coaching staff members last year after the Rose Bowl or before the Rose Bowl about Tyler Shuck. And then once the game started, you could tell that, you know, things just weren't as smooth as maybe we all anticipated. And so for Ty, it's how quickly can he adapt? Now, it helps that he will be here for spring ball. He's already here right now. It helps that they'll have a normal-ish type of a spring. They'll have a normal fourth quarter program that they're going through right now. I will say this, though, John. I can't think of a national title team, a team that won national title, that did it start to finish with true freshmen at quarterback. We've seen true freshmen win the championship game, but none of those guys, to my knowledge, opened week one as the starter. They eventually moved in to their roles. Like Trevor Lawrence, he was not the day one starter for Clemson a couple years ago. Ryan Kelly was, and then they made that change. And so that's kind of what I envision maybe happening, is maybe Anthony Brown, he's the older guy. If they really think they have a playoff team, get him a couple reps, you know, get him going so the team doesn't drop off and lose an early game, and you slowly bring in Ty Thompson, if he is in fact the guy. Because in recruiting, we like to just obsess over the fresh new thing. And Jay Butterfield was the second-best quarterback on the West Coast, second only to DJU, who's now at Clemson, will be their starting quarterback to replace Trevor Lawrence. Jay Butterfield is a legit elite quarterback. He's already in the system. I probably would think Jay probably is the guy that has the better chance of the freshman to start week one than Ty Thompson, but It's going to be a true quarterback battle now.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports. I'm reading Shuck's announcement, and you're right. He says, I'd like to thank my coaches. He gives a shout-out by name to Coach Aaron Feld, the strength and conditioning coach, and then a shout-out to all the athletic trainers by name. What do we make of this, that there's no Joe Moorhead, no Mario Cristobal? Is he essentially saying, thanks for nothing, guys? Thanks for not believing in me?
Well, I'd be pissed if I was him of how the Fiesta Bowl went down, because he got that first drive of the game for Oregon, and he marched them right down the field, and they scored. And while he didn't throw the touchdown pass or run in the play for the score, he led the job. And, you know, he led the offense all the way down. And then he got pulled and didn't come back until, like, the third quarter. And I just feel like that, how that played out for him, it was kind of like, well, what's the deal here? Like, I would be upset if I was him of how the Fiesta Bowl happened, because he got pulled for something that he that wasn't necessarily playing really bad. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's something to that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting as you sort of look at the dynamic that the portal has created with guys being able to jump in. The fact that he's getting in there without even going through spring ball that you mentioned is interesting. Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports with us. How big of a wrinkle is this in the short-term plan, long-term plan for Oregon?
Well, look at from a roster management perspective, and you look at it from a scholarship perspective, and don't look at it from on-field at all. Long-term roster management, this actually helps Oregon, because there's going to be a scholarship crunch across the board at every school in a couple of years of how do you get to 85, how many scholarships can you hand out in that year. And this will give Oregon just one more scholarship to give to a guy maybe next year or in 2023 when it gets real difficult to have a full 25-man recruiting class. On the field perspective, you don't want to lose your starting quarterback, a guy that played in all seven games. You don't want to go into a year in 2021 where your most experienced player is Anthony Brown, who played, what, maybe 60 snaps in his career at Oregon. And his career at Oregon has been during a pandemic when practice has been difficult, when off-season training has been difficult to accomplish. So your quarterback room is incredibly green. That being said, expectations for me are still, this team has to win the conference. They should still be the favorite. You have every single offensive lineman back from last season that started, and you're adding more recruits, a couple of which are guys who could play right away. You're adding two of the best receivers in your recruiting class that ever signed with the program, and you're bringing back your entire receiving core. You lose a tight end in Hunter Cantmoyer, but we saw DJ Johnson do some good things for Oregon, and you'll have Spencer Webb healthy. He was a promising player in 2019, and you're adding some of the best tight ends I've ever had in a recruiting class in 2021. Your running backs are all back except for Cyrus Avila-Keo, and they didn't really use him outside of goal line situations anyways. So your offense is still loaded at every other position besides quarterback. And so I think the expectation for Oregon, even no matter how green they are at the quarterback spot, you got to win the league. Everything that's coming back, you got to win the league.
Help us understand recruiting, because in some family rooms or living rooms, this might be pitched at as, look, you go to Oregon and, you know, they recruit you and maybe they don't stay with you. Other living rooms, it might be, hey, when you go to Oregon, you have a chance to compete, and nothing is certain. Like, if you're the best, you're going to play. Like, which way do you spin that if you're an Oregon fan?
The second one. And it's because they're recruiting at a high level right now, like we've never seen before from a year-to-year basis. We've seen it in a one-year instance, but every single year now under Cristobal, it's one of the best recruiting classes in school history, and the talent continues to get deeper and better. And it's going to be to a point where every single guy is a high-level caliber recruit. And he's copying Alabama, and he's copying what Nick Saban does with his blueprint. And he's preaching competition. You come to Oregon, and your practices are tougher than the games. That's what he's trying to build, is this idea that at Oregon, you have the opportunity to compete for a job and to win a job, but you're going to be pushed every single day, and it doesn't matter who you are.
You know, I am hearing from a lot of people who are high school football fans in this state who are saying Jay Butterfield, as you mentioned, it has to be in this conversation. We like to talk about Ty Thompson. We like to talk about Anthony Brown. What do you know about Butterfield?
He's tall, very good, accurate quarterback. Was a guy that, honestly, like, his persona and his approach to the recruitment was very similar to Justin Herbert. He didn't want to go to combines and camps because he's like, I'm confident in my abilities. I've got offers already that I like. I don't really care about my ranking. I talked to his dad and him at an Elite 11 camp, and his dad had to literally drag him to the camp to compete for the job because he just didn't care about making that type of stuff. He just wanted to play football with his team and get ready for a season. And that was what his attention was on. And that just reminds me so much of Herbert. He's tall like Herbert, 6'6", probably not as athletic or, you know, nimble as Herbert was, but really good arm strength, really smart quarterback. Saw a little dip in percentage of a completion as a senior, but his interceptions were cut in half from his junior year to his senior year, so that's a good positive. Just a really good guy. And was look in 2019, or I think 2020, yeah, when his recruiting class was coming out, everybody was falling over, from a fan perspective, was falling over themselves, hoping he would come to Oregon if they didn't get DJU. And all of a sudden, when the next class shows up and he enrolls at Oregon, and all of a sudden we start hearing about Ty Thompson, it's like he becomes an afterthought. And I watch his film every now and then just to keep myself fresh on what he does and the other quarterbacks. And he's good enough to be a guy at Oregon. And it wouldn't surprise me if he's going to be in this mix.
Yeah, I think it's difficult for a freshman, even if you arrive on campus before spring football and you get some snaps. I mean, I think it's asking a lot to have Ty Thompson come in and, like you said, be the guy and lead you to, you know, week two, Columbus, Ohio against Ohio State. And then, you know, hey, get us, win the conference and get us to the playoff. It's asking a lot, isn't it?
The two greatest quarterbacks in Oregon history in the last 25 years didn't start as true freshmen their first game. Justin Herbert, Marcus Mariota. I mean, Joey Harrington didn't start his first game at Oregon as a true freshman. Kellen Clemens didn't start his first game. Dennis Dixon didn't at Oregon. Tua at Alabama didn't do it. Trevor Lawrence at Clemson didn't do it. Justin Fields didn't do it. I mean, I'm not saying true freshmen can't play at a high level at the football level, but to see a team reach the pinnacle and go as far as you possibly can in that sport and win it all, you just don't see a true freshman start. They gradually get brought in. And doesn't mean Ty Thompson isn't the starter day one. He could be, but it's going to be awfully difficult for Oregon to get as far as they possibly can with a true freshman who's never played at that speed before. That's a huge adjustment. And we saw it with Shuck. You know, there was something that happened during the middle of the year in 2020, and he just couldn't process, couldn't work through it fast enough, and it impacted his play. And he was a redshirt sophomore.
Yeah, I had the same takeaway. Look, if I'm being harsh about mid short season, I went, this isn't the guy. Like this, you know, I've seen enough. He's not the guy who leads you to the next level. Yeah, you can win games with him, but you can't get to the playoff with Tyler Shuck. I think his coaches essentially say the same thing in the Fiesta Bowl. Was it cruel what they did, or is that the business of college football, that, you know, it was evident that he wasn't their guy either?
I don't know if cruel maybe isn't the right word, but if they were going to make that decision, and I totally could have understood it, don't start him.
Yeah.
That's the part where I get really hung up on is, like, if you were going to make the change after the USC game and the Pac-12 championship game, I get it. Like, he didn't look good in that game. In the fourth quarter, you did not throw the football until you absolutely had to because you didn't have confidence in him to be able to make the downfield throws. I get it. It would have made a ton of sense, and people would have bought it 100% if you come out of the game and saying, you know what, he's in a rut right now. he can't play at a level we need him to for our offense to operate at a high level. We're going to make a switch ahead of the Fiesta Bowl or literally at kickoff when they do the interview with Cristobal. You know, maybe he comes forward and hey, we're going to start Anthony Brown today. You know, that all would have made sense. But when they trotted Chuck out to be the starting quarterback of the Fiesta Bowl game and then they score on that first drive and the offense was humming and we don't see him again, that's where you go, what's going on here? Like, if he is your starter, why do we not see him again? And if you're riding the hot hand, like, he was the hot hand that started the game. So, like, it's kind of the nature of the business, but I don't understand the way they did it.
Matt Preem, 24/7 Sports, is with us. Before I cut you loose, let's look at the big picture for Oregon. You've got Mario Cristobal. He had to replace his offensive coordinator last season, Marcus Arroyo. Now he is faced with the defensive coordinator hire. He brings in DeRuiter, linebackers coach, is up in the air. You know, are you going to lose him or not? He gives Ken Wilson the co-defensive coordinator title. What did you make of all of that sort of shuffling around on the defensive side for Oregon?
That's the nature of success. And we're starting to see a lot of people from within the program at the assistant level to off-field levels get elevated from other jobs. And, you know, it was very unique when Mike Bellotti and Chip Kelly and then Mark Helfrich were winning league titles that schools could not poach any of those assistant coaches for the most part to leave and become a head coach somewhere else or a coordinator or a position coach. And, you know, those days are gone too. Like that's not going to happen again. I'm pretty confident we're not going to see like 90% of a coaching staff stay for over a decade or 15 years. So I look at this and think this is a byproduct of success. Schools want what Oregon has, and Cristobal himself has said that this is a sign that when we're winning and we're continuously winning is what he said, you're going to see schools come and try and poach that and take what you have and replicate it. It's the ultimate sign of respect in my mind of rival schools in your conference and other schools trying to poach some of your staff because they want what you have.
Matt, the picture as it forms for you, is there too much chaos here for Oregon with, you know, new coordinator, quarterback uncertainty, Ohio State in week two? Does that concern you at all, or do you feel like, hey, man, this is just how it is in college football as you look around?
It's just how it is, and the expectations are the same for Oregon today as they were yesterday before Chuck left. Before the offseason coaching changes with Hayward out to Cal and Avalos to Boise State and where some of the recruiting guys in the Oregon's department going to Boise with him. You know, the expectation is on the field, Oregon wins championships, and they're competing for championships, and that's what will be expected of the 2021 version of the Oregon football team on the field. Off the field, recruiting still has to be at a high level. Oregon still is going to have to be expected to sign a top 10, top 15 recruiting class in 2022. And they're off to a good start. They've got multiple verbal commitments. They're in a really good position for multiple 4- and 5-star guys. And, you know, the Pacific Northwest, luckily for Oregon this year, is loaded. You know, there's a lot of guys at the receiver spot, one in Vancouver, one in Beaverton. There's a couple offensive linemen in the Seattle area that are extremely high on Oregon. There's a safety prospect that's really close to committing to Oregon from Jefferson High School in Portland. So from a recruiting perspective, there might be some new faces, but they don't have to go very far for some key spots across the board. So the expectation there, too, needs to be you need to be one of the better schools in the country there, too.
The coaching that we have seen at different times crop up as an issue, game management. Are you convinced that Tim DeRuiter, Joe Moorhead, Mario Cristobal, that three-headed monster, has what it takes?
That's defensively, yes, because Cristobal is not on that side of the ball, and he's typically let the defense do what they want to do. I think DeRuiter is a good coach. I think Ken Wilson is a good coach. Joe Salavea, Rod Chance, those guys are all good coaches. Who they hire to replace the Hayward spot, I'm assuming will be a good coach as well, because look at Cristobal's track record. Offensively, I think the biggest storyline for me outside of quarterback battle is will Cristobal allow Moorhead to have full autonomy of the offense and run things how it needs to be run in his eyes, or will Cristobal be involved a little bit more than a typical head coach would be? I'd like to see them be a little more aggressive on certain things. I'd like to, you know, see them stop rotating offensive linemen, and maybe that's just a COVID reason for why they did that. I thought that kind of stunted the growth of that position a little bit in 2020, but I think ultimately it's will Joe Moorhead have full authority of the offense to do what he wants, or will we see some of these, you know, third and one, well, they're going to go dive right, you know, to the quarterback and pistol, and it's going to get stuffed.
Yeah, I think there's a learning curve still. I look at Mario Cristobal, and I know he's not a young man. I still think he's still relatively inexperienced as a head coach. And I don't know why I have that feeling. Maybe it's just me.
I kind of still think that. I mean, he's going now on year four for him at Oregon. I think he had, 4 years at FIU? So he's got 8 years. And you know, the unique thing, though, is that, you know, when he first got the job at Oregon, yeah, he was still relatively green as a head coach, but he was saddled with the expectations of you've got to win big and win big right away. I think this year will be really telling, more so even though in 2022, of just where this program is at from a health standpoint, from a huge, above angle perspective, and where Cristobal is, because in 2022, it's his team. There won't be anyone on this team that came before him. And we'll get a true indication of what he envisions Oregon football to be by that time. But I think 2021 will be a really good showing of that as well.
All right. What's the scene there in Eugene as far as snow on the ground? I got snow outside. The kids are in the driveway playing.
Don't give that to me. Don't bring me that voodoo. I do not want that right now. It's not snowing here. I am in the process of moving. And so if it snows, I am blaming you, and I'm calling you every hour for you to come down and help me finish this job, because I got to be out of the house by 5, and if it snows, oh, my God.
Oh, I am so sorry. I'm sorry for interrupting the move. If you're in Eugene and you want to help Matt Prehm out, you got a flatbed truck or something, find him on Twitter. Prehm, you're the best, man. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, I appreciate it, John. Thanks.
All right, there's good stuff. I think it's really interesting what's going on at Oregon. I'm going to talk about Oregon and Oregon State coming up next. If you are a Beaver or a Duck fan or an interested Pac-12 party, you're going to want to leave it here. Oregon and Oregon State as college football programs just for a moment. We got Punch It Audio coming up here in a few minutes in the next segment. But right now I want to talk about Oregon and Oregon State because I feel like there are questions about both programs right now that have to be answered. And the last time that I felt like this, it was right in the final season of Gary Anderson's tenure at Oregon State. And Willie Taggart was coming back at Oregon, and suddenly you had what I called the most interesting time in our state's history when it came to football, right? Willie Taggart was on the scene, and I was kind of wondering, like, life after Mark Helfrich, what was it going to be like for Oregon football? That's interesting to me. Like, what is Willie Taggart going to do with this thing? And Willie was on the scene, and Coach Taggart was talking about do something and make no excuses, and there was just a different vibe around the program. It was like swag surfing on the kickoffs, and it was a lot of recruiting buzz, and Mario Cristobal was your offensive line coach at the time. And then meanwhile at Oregon State, you had Gary Anderson, who had come off winning a Civil War football game the year before and had some momentum, and all of a sudden it was like, this is really interesting. And I wrote a column, and I said, before this final season for Willie Taggart and Gary Anderson, that this was going to be the most interesting college football season in state history. And people were like, come on, you had Mike Riley win 10 games. You had Chip Kelly go to a national championship game. You had Marcus Mariota. And I was like, no, I'm not talking about success. I'm talking about interest, intrigue, questions that need to be answered. Because every season comes with questions. Coaches have questions. Players have questions. Fans have questions. Media has questions. I feel like I have a whole notepad of questions coming up for this season for Oregon football and a whole nother notepad for Oregon State. And I'll just start with Oregon because Tyler Shuck and his departure today raises questions. Clearly, not happy with his situation at Oregon. You don't leave someplace that you are feeling comfortable in and thriving in. So Tyler Shuck, by virtue of that Fiesta Bowl fiasco, has determined that he no longer wants to be at Oregon. You can't ignore that. I think even coaches at Oregon, while they would normally try to tell you, no, this is just part of football, guy jumping in a portal and trying to get himself somewhere else. And the coaches will tell you that the timing of this and the fact that the kid didn't thank his coach, his head coach, or his offensive coordinator on the way out the door, he essentially felt slapped in the face and Tyler Shuck's going somewhere else to complete his college football career. I kind of wondered, and I wonder where he will land. We'll talk about that maybe later. That's a question for another day. But the questions to me are around Oregon football. Can Oregon find traction and continuity? I have felt like they momentarily will find some traction, and then it's disrupted by a coordinator leaving, another coordinator leaving, players leaving. Yeah, of course, the pandemic disrupted everyone. But will Oregon be able to find in the next 6 months some kind of traction that will give us a feeling that this is a team that can compete in week two at Ohio State? What I mean is, are they ready for the big time given all the sort of disruption and chaos that they have faced? It is a question I think I have to have on my notepad. Further, has the coaching staff learned enough in the recent weeks to give us confidence that they can, for a sustained season, withstand sort of the ups and downs of a normal college football season? Like, I think there was some magic in what Oregon did in having that continuity of coaching staff and the core coaches who were held over year for year for year. Gary Campbell, Nick Aliotti, you looked around that coaching room, you know, John Neal, you knew what you were getting. The players knew what they were getting. There wasn't a lot of, hey, let's start by explaining who we are at the beginning of every season, because everybody knew who this Oregon coaching staff was, and I think that continuity was extremely valuable. It wasn't just continuity, though. They had coaches in there that could have gone on and been head coaches other places. Nick Aliotti, your defensive coordinator, could have positioned himself earlier in his career to go be a head coach at Cal or somewhere else. But instead, you know, he was on this staff for for the better part of, you know, 2.5-3 decades as the defensive coordinator and probably, you know, the most qualified D coordinator in the conference. And you had Gary Campbell at running backs coach and Don Pelham as linebackers coach who were guys that, like, could have gone and sought other opportunities other places, but stayed at Oregon because they were largely happy. They liked the environment they were working in. They liked where they were living, and there was something to be said for that. We never wondered if the coaching staff at Oregon under Mike Bellotti, whether or not, you know, are they going to get better at game management? Are they going to be good enough in game management that they can get to the next level? That was never a question I asked. I never asked it under Chip Kelly. I never really asked it under Mark Helfrich. There were different questions for Helfrich. I wondered if he had the CEO gene that you need to be a leader. Like, I think Mark Helfrich really struggled with, is he a head coach? That's a question. Like, can you look in the mirror and are you a head coach? I don't think he was. I think he was a great coordinator that probably should have been happy being the coordinator. And if Chip Kelly had stayed forever, Mark Helfrich would have had, a long career as the offensive coordinator at Oregon until somebody tried to hire him away. But this Oregon coaching staff under Mario Cristobal, I think, has questions about game management that it has to answer. And it can only answer them by suiting up next season against Fresno State and Ohio State and Cal and Stanford and Oregon State and answering them. They were not good in the third quarter and second half of games this season. They weren't great. It's a red flag for me, the way they lost against Oregon State. it's a red flag for me, the way they handled the quarterback position in the Fiesta Bowl. It's a red flag for me that you have sort of this chronic turnover, and I wonder if it's sort of the antithesis of what Oregon fostered for all those years by, you know, getting coaches together who knew each other, liked each other, wanted to work alongside each other. You knew you had longevity. You knew you had continuity. The coaches' wives were all friends. I sort of wonder if that has been lost at Oregon in a way that will inhibit the program. See, because Mario Cristobal learned what he learned at Alabama, Miami, some other places, maybe from watching Willie Taggart. Mario Cristobal, I think, has sort of come up from a mentality of, you know what, he is going to sort of foster the idea that it's going to be a competition. We're going to have turnover. I just hope to stagger the turnover on the offensive and defensive side of the ball so it doesn't become a big problem. So, you know, while in most cases people would be wondering who's going to start at quarterback next season for Oregon, I'm kind of looking at it from the standpoint of, is this coaching staff equipped to take this program, which has won back-to-back Pac-12 championships, is it equipped to take it to the next level? You know? I that's kind of the challenge, I think. And I think Mario Cristobal signs on for it and accepts it. Meanwhile, at Oregon State, it's a very different challenge. I think Jonathan Smith's got to get better players. I feel like he can coach and he can game manage just fine. I think he's a really good offensive mind. I wonder, though, if he will ever recruit the kind of talent that makes Oregon State a threat to win the Pac-12 championship. Mike Riley did it. Mike Riley had him there. Mike Riley had Oregon State dangerous. There was a three-year period where Oregon State won 29 games, almost 10 a year average. And there was, I can go back and look in the archives, but there was a time kind of in the transition from Mike Bellotti to Chip Kelly where I was kind of wondering, like, who's going to emerge as the king of the state when it comes to college football? Because you could compare Mike Riley's seasons with sort of the end of Mike Bellotti's tenure, and the trajectory for Oregon State was more promising. Jonathan Smith needs better players. That's what it comes down to at Oregon State. He's got to go get them. Larry is in Eugene, listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Go ahead, Larry.
Yes, I think it's a win-win for both the Duck offense and for Tyler Shuck, because Tyler Shuck now will have the opportunity, hopefully, to be a starting quarterback and get groomed. I think he got thrown into a situation that was pretty difficult. He became the starter because he had been in the program for 2 years, and he knew the offense better, and he did perform well at first. But to me, Anthony Brown showed he's got the it factor. He has got experience. He's not a green quarterback, as Matt Breen was talking about. Next, he'll have spring to get totally ready for the starting position in the fall. And then Ty Washington and Butterfield can be groomed behind him. But it's kind of sad for Tyler Shuck because he really didn't have the time to be groomed as a quarterback.
It was a weird year. But I think the ultimate thing was I didn't need to see any more Tyler Shuck. I think he was a good kid. I don't think he was a quarterback that could take you to Columbus and win. I don't think he was a quarterback that could take you to the playoff and win. And I think Oregon's coaching staff acknowledged that. I think they kind of bumbled through the Fiesta Bowl. I'm not sold totally on Anthony Brown either. I have concerns that, you know, he came into the program a year ago. Joe Moorhead got to see him in practice every day. I didn't. And still, we didn't see him all year, even though Shuck was shaky throughout the season. We didn't see him till the Fiesta Bowl. I haven't seen enough of Anthony Brown to tell you that he's going to be the quarterback. Ty Thompson's got all the hype. Brown's got the experience, right?
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.